What is the function of a foreskin?
Well, there are many suggestions from different experts now. Some experts think it doesn't serve any purpose, mm-hmm. while some others feel like, you know what, it can serve as a, for example, a protective function, for example, as a child. Mm-hmm. It protects the head of the penis from, let's say, an infant, the head of penis from contamination of the feces and or urine in the nappy. Mm-hmm. Or also, it also protects as an adult, from bruises, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Or some people also say it provides function with your sensation. It also helps with to boost during sexual intercourse prior to sensation. But we all know that sometimes we know that the glands, which is the head of the penis, is the one which is much more sensitive compared to your foreskin. Mm-hmm. Do you understand? So there's truly different opinions about what the function of the foreskin is. But then what we know is that it does provide, for example, protection. It covers up the head of the penis. But then it doesn't provide a vital life or death mm-hmm. function, if I can say that.
So if you're talking about the kind of protective duty that it performs, is there perhaps an age restriction where we say that, Mona Ismulo, you've grown enough now for you to not need this kind of protection from the foreskin?
Well, we all know that as you grow older, that there's more increased sensation with your glands. That it's what will, if people are concerned that they think the foreskin helps with the sexual pleasure or whatever it is, mm-hmm. we all know that the glands will really act because it's much more sensitive compared to, you know, the foreskin, if I can say that. That, you know, provides the sexual pleasure that people are talking about.
And I think as we move on with the conversation, yeah. then, talking about the foreskin and the glands and all yeah. these terminologies, let's get into circumcision itself.
Yes, yes.
There are different ways of circumcision.
Yes.
There's traditional ones that we know we are
yes.
tabbing.
Yes.
And then there's medical male circumcision.
Yes.
And tonight we're going to try to streamline the conversation around okay. medical male circumcision.
Yes.
And I want you to perhaps take us through the procedure that is followed in a medical circumcision.
Medical term.
What gets to be done, which areas of the penis are touched, and all those things.
Okay. So basically, like you said, there are different ways or methods of circumcision. You mm-hmm. have your cultural one. And you also have your medical one. Mm-hmm. So your cultural one can also be divided into, you know, religious and cultural. For example, mm-hmm. we know the Jewish people.
Yes.
When the baby is born, they circumcise their children. It's part of their religious beliefs. And also in the Xhosa culture, we know that there's a certain age that their boy child will be sent to the mountains to go and have a circumcision. Mm-hmm. But now we must understand that most of the time when the boy children go to the mountains, it's usually a partial circumcision, if I can say that.
Yes.
Which means they don't really cut the entire foreskin.
Yes.
They cut partial foreskin, which means I will say half of the head of the penis is still showing and half of the foreskin is still somehow present there. That's how some of the procedure that they use and stuff like that. So then you have your medical male circumcision, which is usually done at health facilities, whether it's private or public. So in the public sector, they do it at your district level hospitals. You know, in the healthcare sector, we have your different levels of care.
Yes.
So your district level hospitals are at your primary healthcare, which is your level one hospitals. That also includes your clinics as well. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. And also, but now, given the fact that there's a high volume of men and boys who do circumcisions, the government essentially is affiliated with private institutions which help provide the service of male circumcision, mm-hmm. medical male circumcision. So mm-hmm. we have, for example, your Love Life programs or
yes.
your Brothers for Life
Brothers
program,
for Life, yes.
yes, who are providing services for the government in order to help people male circumcision. So let's just discuss how it works. So basically, anyone male can get circumcised, right? So let's say you are an adult now, above 18 years of age, mm-hmm. you can give your own consent to circumcise. So when it comes to the Brothers for Life or the Love Life procedures, that you will have to book, basically. So you book and then probably will give you a date when to come. So basically what you need, you don't even need cash or anything. You're probably at the hospital, you have to open a file, for example, but then you pay like $40 to open a file at the public health facility, mm-hmm. and then you will be given a date to say, you know what, on this day, come, we're going to circumcise you on this day. Then you come with your basic documents, your IDs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And the procedure is that it will be carried out either by a medical doctor or by a nurse, someone who's trained, because people go to courses now, mm-hmm. to learn how to do a male circumcision. Basically, it's a very simple, quick procedure that occurs. So we use what we call first of all, require a bed, of course, and some equipment, a blade, some washing substances, some gloves, everything must be sterile manner. So that's a medical word. So everything is very sterile within the bed. And we use what we call a local anesthetic, which means we don't make you entirely sleep, but only locally we anesthetize.
So you numb down basically
the area of the pain. So which means we will numb down the penis, the skin where the sensation is to try so that we can be able to excise very well. So basically they retract the foreskin, right? And then they make incision to try and cut off the foreskin, and then they apply sutures, né? The sutures they apply is absorbable sutures, né? Which means you don't have to take them out in any way. So, you know, in when you suture wounds, you get those ones like, you know, your nylons, meaning that you must come after a few days to remove them. But in terms of circumcision, they use the ones which can be absorbed by the skin over time. So it's just a snip cut, and then we apply sutures, and then we apply dressing, and then that's it. It's a very quick procedure.
So before the procedure is undertaken,
yes,
is there some kind of a counseling session?
Yes, of course. No, then of course there has to be, for everything done in the medical surgical field, there has to be consent, which means there has to be explanation about what you're gonna do,
this is what
how you're gonna do it
into.
These are the benefits of it, these are the complications of it. You have to get that before you sign any consent at the medical, you know, industry or in hospital. You have to, the doctor or whoever is responsible must explain to you very well what is the risks involved, the benefits involved, and how the process is going to be carried out. You understand? So that you, by the time you put your signature on that consent form, you understand exactly what's going to happen.
And we'll get to the benefits.
Yeah.
I was asking that question because, I mean, it's important to, you know, that people that are scared of losing things.
Yes.
And you might hold on even to something like a foreskin because when you're a kid, someone left you. They start crying.
Yes,
attachment. They always leave me, even my ex-girlfriend left, and now my foreskin is not coming back.
Yes.
You said something about consent.
Yes.
Leah Molatzedi is asking us on Facebook to say she wants to take her twins to go and circumcise.
Okay.
As a parent, can I take my kids to circumcise without their consent? And if consent is that important, what is the legal consenting age?
Okay, so let's do this. So children below the age of 10 can be circumcised by secondary to medical reasons. So this is now we're talking about the public healthcare sector. So if you're below 10 years old, the only reason why we will circumcise you is because of a medical reason. For example, there's some kids who suffer from paraphimosis, which means sometimes the foreskin retracts back and it blocks, I would say, the drainage of the veins. So your penis gets swollen and very painful. That's paraphimosis, more or less. So if your child keeps suffering from that, you say, you know what, this could be an indication for a medical indication for a circumcision. Then above 10 years of age, the children will need a consent from the parents. So which means above 10 and below 18 years of age will need a consent from either one of the parents or both of the parents or their legal guardians. Do you understand? To be able to perform the male circumcision. And then above 18 years of age, we know that it's you can decide on your own to whether you want circumcision or not. But now it happens that I was talking now earlier. Now it happens that now, as you grow older, you realize that, oh, my parents made a decision for me to take off my foreskin, but I didn't consent.
I want it back.
Okay, you want it back. But I think it's the whole idea of you made a decision for me about my own body for something that is not really a life or death situation. Do you understand? And apparently now there is somehow a possibility that even kids now, as adults, they can sue their parents.
Let's talk about that because it's one of the concerns. And we have Noctula Sithole, who's also saying that she wants to take her son for that. And her son is still quite very small.
Yeah.
So we know the benefits of circumcision from a health point of view.
Yes.
But what are the repercussions of getting your kid circumcised as a parent from a futuristic point of view? What risks do you stand to have to face?
Well, the thing is, I would then talk about this one issue that sometimes it happens that the child grows up and the child feels like, you know what? As a mother, I understand, or my father, but I feel like you took a decision for me without my own consent and for something that I feel like is not a life or death decision that you could have made. You could have just waited for me
to decide on your own.
We're talking about, for example, which is a very unrelated topic, that, for example, Caster Semenya, had the mother decided that they must castrate her what will have happened in the future, because now she must decide on how she wants to live, like, do you understand? So it's more or less the same thing. So I feel like one of the issues that people have is that you made a decision for me without my own consent for something that would have not really affected my lifespan.
And I mean, if someone were to use that, the dichotomy of life and death, and say, I mean, this thing wouldn't have changed my life in any other particular way, then why are we obsessing so much about circumcision? Because we're saying that it helps when it comes to, you know, your, you know, susceptibility to being infected by HIV and AIDS. We're talking about so many health benefits.
Yeah.
But you're also saying that this is not necessarily a matter of life and death. What exactly are we saying? And is it true that it helps when it comes to HIV and AIDS?
Yes. So here's the thing. Let's just be realistic here. South Africa still remains one of the only country with the highest prevalence of HIV infections around the world, the highest. So now, as a government, when you are facing such a challenge, you're trying to figure out what are possible ways or methods to try and reduce the risk of infection. So circumcision is one tool of many, many things that people can do to try and reduce the risk of HIV transmission. So this is how it works. So there's a belief that, not the belief, the experts say that the foreskin has got some cells which are more sensitive to receive the HIV virus. So they feel like if you remove the foreskin, you're reducing the chances or reducing the risk of contracting HIV. Do you understand the HIV infection? And also, there's also that if you have a foreskin, there's also a large surface area where it can have tears, can have bruises. And we all know that if you have a tear or a bruise, it can become a port of entry for the HIV virus. Do you understand? We also believe that it also, because of the foreskin, the surface area, it can also be a medium or a housing medium for microorganisms that, you know, your STIs, you know, your gonorrheas, your herpes, your syphilis, your, you know, that can easily transmit that. Do you understand? So also when you circumcise, it's also, it improves the hygiene of the penis. Do you understand? Because it's easier to wash the head of the penis other than the foreskin of the penis. And also it reduces the risk of penile cancer. For the guys, of course. And also for the ladies, it also reduces the risk of cervical cancer, because we all know that one of the STIs that causes gives her cervical cancer is human papillomavirus. And we know that the foreskin can become also a medium or a housing medium that will, can easily make you transmit the HPV to your
I like the fact that you're talking about HPV and cervical cancer, because Lerato Mdisana is actually saying that please ask about the relationship between HPV and cervical cancer in women. Apparently the virus gets trapped in the man's foreskin infects the woman, causing cervical cancer. So there are health benefits for women as well when it comes to
that. So I know many people are concerned about, when it comes to unprotected sex, I know many people are concerned about HIV, but there's a whole list of STIs which you can get, you know. So well, one of them will be HPV, human papillomavirus, which has many other subtypes. So one of the subtypes which we have is like type 16, which will lead to, which means it changes, I would say it changes the genetic makeup of the cells lining the cervix. The cervix is more like the mouth of the womb, in a woman. So if that virus changes the genetic makeup of the cells, it can make them to become pre-malignant, which means they can become cancerous in the future. So that's the link between unprotected sex and HPV type 16 and also cervical cancer. But also HPV can also is the one that gives you your warts, your condylomatous and stuff like that. It also comes from that types of HPVs. Do you understand?
We're sitting at 17 minutes after 7 o'clock. It's Kofsi FM 97.0. If you've just joined us, this is the interview. We're currently in conversation with Dr. Oscar Mabele, and we're talking about everything related to medical male circumcision, and also we're going to be taking some of your comments as far as your views are concerned. There's a question that we asked you on our social media pages. We said to you as a man that your before and after when it comes to circumcision, has it affected your sensitivity to pleasure in any particular way? And one thing that I find very interesting about the question that we asked is that most of the men could only just laugh at the question, but women had something to say. And one of the women who said something about this is Mpho Yamrena. Mpho Yamrena, or personally, I prefer my man when he had the skin. He managed to last longer, and also from a cleanliness perspective, she understands that it's good for the men to have gone for circumcision, but she says that in terms of pleasure and in terms of endurance, that she actually even regrets being the one that said to the men, please go for the cut. That's what she said. And I'm going to give you a chance to respond to that. We also then have Musile Sinuku. Musile Lena Ore, circumcision has done that to most men, which is to sort of do away with their sensitivity to pleasure. And then she says most sensory nerves were cut off, more how into a valve for skin. Therefore, it affects hore motwanta te ukwamana te kana kotsa thobalano ka pajwa. What do you have to say to that? Because you said earlier on that the foreskin is not necessarily that kind of a device for pleasure in men. Yes. So okay. What do you have to say about
it? So basically what I can say is that, first of all, a sexual experience now, it's, I would say, it depends on each and every couple. Mm-hmm. So we cannot say one thing applies to everybody who is having a sexual relationship. So you and your partner, you know very well what turns you on. You know very well that if you kiss here, if you lick here, if you do this, it turns your partner on. So basically, a sexual health is between two people. So what worked for somebody else doesn't necessarily have to work for you, to understand, or what didn't work for somebody else doesn't have to necessarily don't work for you. So it's a very individual couple thing. Do you understand? But then we all know that, I would say that the glands is much more sensitive tool that also increases pleasure. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. Of course, yes, the foreskin does have nerves and stuff like that, but then I don't think it provides that much. I don't think its removal will lead to a drastic, dramatic change in the sexual mm-hmm. pleasure. Mm-hmm. And also, like I said, it depends on many things that will lead to pleasure. Technique, the dynamics you have between your sexual partner and all those things. So there are many factors that are involved in a sexual experience. Mm-hmm. You understand? And I don't understand why are we only concerned about the men's pleasure in this when there's two people who are involved in sexual intercourse. Understand why and talk about the women's, you know,
mm-hmm. aspect. So are you saying that women stand to benefit more from a pleasure point of view if the penis is circumcised? Because they think so. There's barren that one. But also the
I think that should be a researched people. Women uh-huh. should be able to answer themselves. So Rena, do you think if your man is circumcised, do you feel more pleasure, or is sexual satisfaction determined by a foreskin or by things like your technique, mm-hmm. the connection you have with your sexual partner, mm-hmm. the love you have, or whatever? You get my point. We can't say the foreskin is really the ultimate determining factor of whether something is a sexually pleasurable experience.
But there are people that believe that the sensitivity of the foreskin is more like what the clitoris is to women. And that, you know, that's
the glance, I think, is more of what the clitoris is to women.
So when we say that there's no, basically, because what I'm getting from you is that there's no scientific proof that links pleasure and the presence or absence.
Well, I would say that some experts have said that the foreskin, it does, of course, have got nerve supply mm-hmm. and of course, sensation and stuff like that. But no, nobody has, I haven't read a study where they prove that, you know what, the removal of this thing mm-hmm. will affect your sexual experience mm-hmm. dramatically.
I remember there's a thread I was following some mm-hmm. months ago on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a guy who said, I was laughing with some other guy about this because it hit home.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he said that if he were to be given an opportunity to go back and get his foreskin, he would go running because he regrets that. I mean, that's the conversation. And what I'm trying to get you to balance the conversation.
You want me to say something? You want no, me to put
my
foot in.
I want you to help us as someone who is more who's more learned in the field. Mm-hmm. But also I'm trying to get the human side. Because at what point do we say this is the end of science and this is the beginning of humanity? If we say as men that this thing has affected us, but science has not yet proven that it affects us, at what point do you strike the balance between lived experience and scientific experiments?
Which is why I love research so much, do you understand? Mm-hmm. So if somehow somebody could make a research and really find out for those men who have been circumcised and those who have not, to inquire, a subjective inquiry, to know what...
An objective one,
also subjective one, to figure out whether the foreskin really plays a major role in sexual pleasure and sexual mm-hmm. whether it can improve your sexual, you know, experience in the bedroom, so that people don't have to say, you know what, I regret cutting it off. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. But also, I understand one of the strategies that the government is trying to do is that they're trying to use every possible method to try and reduce the risk of people getting HIV infection. And like I said, medical male circumcision is one of the many tools that the government can try to use to try and decrease the risk of infection. And it doesn't mean, I know you asked this question, that sometimes people think that if you circumcise
you can have unprotected sex. Yes.
No,
let's talk about that then. What are some of the safety concerns that you still have to, the precautions that you still have to take after circumcision?
Listen, circumcision does not prevent you from getting HIV. Mm-hmm. It reduces your risk of acquiring HIV.
Apparently like by 60% or so.
Yes, yes. Because like I said, they believe that the foreskin has got receptors to the HIV virus. So mm-hmm. that's why if you cut it off, you reduce the possibility of the HIV virus, attaching to the cells.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, you still have to be precautious. You still have to live a healthy sexual lifestyle, which means monogamous
relationship. Using a condom.
Using protection, using uh-huh. condoms, uh-huh. monogamous relationship, don't go sleeping around.
The condom is not how you can say, how is it a dildo? How is it a cucumber? Next?
Isn't that a mindset, though? I think, isn't that a state of the mind that people think that if you're using a condom, it doesn't give you that much pleasure? Isn't that what you've told yourself? Therefore, you'll experience that. Do you understand? But one of the ways to protect is to reduce the fluids contamination mm-hmm. is to use a condom.
I think HIV and AIDS and many other STDs have complicated life for us so much that
in what way?
The very act of sex itself mm-hmm. is so policed and guarded that you don't even get to enjoy it because you're thinking, I might die from having this.
But here's the thing. If you and your sexual partner, you trust each other mm-hmm. and you know that you're in a monogamous relationship and you understand the love and the trust you have for each other, you can do what works for you.
There's a former president that was once accused of rape. And when asked about whether he was conscious of the fact that this woman has HIV, he said, yes, I was. And then they asked if it didn't at any point deter him from having that sexual intercourse. And he said, no, I took a shower. I was a kid when he said that. I didn't understand anything that he was saying. But there are men that believe that, even if I'm not circumcised. So what I'm trying to get to is, do we have an alternative to someone who might say, I don't want to circumcise, so are there other things that I can do to keep myself both hygienic but also clean and safe?
If your decision then is not to circumcise, uh-huh. you still, if you want to maintain a STI free sexual health, it means that you must use precautions. And what we've proven right now is that it's either you abstain, which is very hard for some people.
Mm-hmm.
God bless those who do it. Or it's that you're in a monogamous relationship with someone that you trust, that you know that this is my only sexual partner in this world. And you guys know, you are aware of the health, your status health that each one has. Or either you use condoms, which are barrier methods that have been proven to prevent cross-contamination of bodily fluids. Do you understand? And one of the port of entries for HIV virus, for example, or any other STI, is that you just need a small cut or any open blood vessel that allows the microorganisms are very small. You need a microscope to see them.
Mm-hmm.
Any port of entry that will allow microorganisms to enter bloodstream or to enter the other person, it does a port of entry.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand? So taking a shower or whatever does not reduce your chances of getting STIs. But I will add that there's a study which has proven that when women, after they have had sexual intercourse, if they bath or they take a shower or mm-hmm. if they wash their genitals, mm-hmm. that it reduces their chances of developing urinary tract infections or bladder infections, stuff like that.
You see what I meant when I said HIV has made life difficult for us? Because I saw how long it's a body pillow talk over the motor to slap.
No, it's not like that.
I saw how long it's, how was it?
I think more or less it has made us conscious of our sexual health. It has made us to more conscious. It has made us to become a woke society where we really are open about sexual talk. I mean, how many people now, couples now, they are open-minded about discussing over, hey, is this what works for me? This is what I do. This is my point. Do you understand? That's how I feel it is done for us.
So I went to school of Satabi in
Kitswalobolo. Okay.
And my card was so that when I urinate, I don't have a splash. But there's still the part
so
of
it
that,
a partial.
That remains, yes.
It does a partial card.
So what should I do?
So if it's giving you issues, this is what we've seen many, many, many times, because we know that for those initiation schools which are under strict regulation, mm-hmm. which are following the guidelines and the government's guidelines and protective, you know, guidelines, those who are doing a good job and a very safe job. We know that they do, most of them do a partial circumcision, but if we understand that there can be complications to circumcision, and then if it requires that you need a medical attention to fix that, you can fix it if it's giving you issues. Mm-hmm. We've had people who said, you know what, some people, there have been serious complications where they get an amateur motor, just wants money from their mothers, and then he takes young boys to the mountain. He does a bad job. He even cuts off the glances of the, like, cuts off, chops off the penis. We've had bad complications where people's penises have been chopped because there was an amateur person doing the job. And somehow the medical industry, the private, whatever it is, has to fix some of the issues that are happening in, you know, the initiation, the other cultural practices.
But I'm sure there are limitations also in that, because they don't allow just anyone to get into that space. But are we, from a policy point of view,
yes,
as we've just alluded to botched circumcisions and how so many young boys lose their lives because of that.
Yeah.
Every initiation season, we know there's going to be tragedies in terms of that.
Yes.
And you guys, as the doctors, seem to know how this should be done in a much more safer way.
Okay.
How can we go about then in bringing the two together, sort of schools of thought to say, as the traditionalists, we do it this way, and then you say, okay, continue doing it this way, but these are the better ways to go about in doing it?
That's such a good question. But I'll be very honest. I'm not going to be biased and say somehow the medical, my department or medical industry doesn't have any issues.
Mm-hmm.
We have issues. We have complications as well. Even us who know the right way, of, not the right way, but the medical way of doing things, we also have complications as well, because we also have junior doctors who sometimes have to perform circumcisions. We also have people who complicate. So it's not just, the complication doesn't just occur in the cultural side, it also occurs in the medical side. But I just wish that there could be strict regulations between the government and the health department, and also the cultural aspect of initiation schools, where both people can say, you know what, we're not gonna change the intention and the role of what initiation school means in a certain culture, but we want it to be done in a safe way so that we can reduce the risks of children dying or children developing sepsis or infection of the penis or developing serious complications when it comes to their penis. Because, you know, the penis provides, one of the functions is to provide fertility. I mean, infertility is a very big topic. If a man cannot produce babies, it affects how they see themselves and stuff like that. I don't understand. So there has to be a way where the government or Department of Health somehow comes together with the cultural aspect of, you know, initiation schools to find ways where we can regulate. It's like even traditional medicine. We cannot say, no, they are wrong, they are bad. No, we need to find a way where
of,
we can come together.
To regulate that.
And yeah, as much, like you said, as much as there are botched people in the traditional, there are also botched people in the medical.
Because I remember there's a book that talks about a character that went to initiation school and they came back with those complications. It's called A Man Is Not a Man, written by Thando Mkoloza.
Okay.
Anyway, we're about to get to the end of our conversation.
Okay. So
there's so many things that we can talk about around this, so we'll try to see how we have a follow-up of that.
Okay, we need to.
But what recourse is there for someone who goes for medical male circumcision and it botches?
Okay, here's what happens now. So one of the, so let's speak from my medical Department of Health side. So we know that after males succumb, when the procedure is done, we'll apply dressing, which will keep about for 2 days, and then after the 2 days, you must go visit your local health practitioner so that they can check, so that they can open the wound and they can assess for any signs of complication, which means if you're bleeding too much from the procedure, or if now you start to show signs of infection, which means the head of the penis is starting to become red, swollen and painful, or sometimes a few days later you can see that there's some pus, you know, oozing from the wound, that it means somehow developed complications, then you can really come to the health facility, your local health facility, so that can be reassessed, so that can be done. We have a department called urology. You know, in medicine there are many departments. So urology is the one that deals with aspects of the male genitalia, your penises and your testicles and everything like that. So they deal with such complications if they do occur in the future. But we do know that one of the precautions that one must take is that after procedure, you make sure that you are checked. They will tell you what signs of bleeding or infection to look out for, and also no sex or masturbation for at least 6 weeks, which is a lifetime to some people. With no sex or masturbation for 6 weeks,
does it come with a particular diet to avoid stimulating yourself?
No, because it does happen that
play some mahi in that.
No. It does happen that you do get an erection during your, and basically it does happen that the pain that comes with that, it's so severe, it's so painful, but it's normal to happen. It's normal, but then you try to reduce any risk of infection or bleeding or more tears by do not masturbate, do not have sex in those
in that period.
In that period, and then you'll heal after 6 weeks, and then you'll be fine after that. Yeah.
Okay, end of our discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Just a quick reminder.
Yes.
How should people go about if they want to book a session for circumcision? And those just basic details.
Yeah, the basic details. Like I said, it can be done at your local GPs. Mm-hmm. Some GPs do it. It can be done at your level 1 primary healthcare facilities, like your local clinics, or also can be done by district level hospitals. There's like programs such as your Love Life and your Brothers for Life. They have contacts on their websites and stuff where you can call them and organize to see where are they offering the services. Mm-hmm. They are for free so much as far as I'm concerned. But before you decide on doing a surgical procedure, make sure that you understand how it's done, what is involved, and the complications, so that when you sign, you know exactly what you're putting yourself into. But I would say that there are benefits to having, as a medical doctor, I know that there are benefits to having male circumcision.
Mm-hmm.
Many benefits to improved sexual health of men.
Thank you for your time, Dr.
Thank you so much, Ace.